Okay, we're beginning here on Yud Daled Amud Aleph by the two dots opposite Tosafot v'Rav Yehuda. Here the Gemara says Tani Chado. We have one brayta that says Ubarot umenikot mitanot perishonot ve'ein mitanot ba'acharonot. So one brayta that says when it comes to women who are pregnant or women that are nursing, they fast in the first set of fast days, but they do not fast in the latter set of fast days. V'tanya idoch, we have a second brayta that says mitanot b'acharonot ve'in mitanot b'rishonot. They fast on the latter fast days, but not on the earlier fast days. V'tanya idoch, and then we have a third brayta that says ein mitanot lo b'rishonot ve'lo b'acharonot. They don't fast not on the first fast days and not on the latter fast days. So you clearly have three braytot here, which are difficult to reconcile because they seem to be arguing. Am Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says, I can reconcile all of these braytot. Nakut, emtziyata biyadech, dimitartzun kulhu. Assume that we're talking about the middle set of fasts. And by that, you can then solve all of these braytot and resolve the stira between them. Remember that there are three sets of fast days. They're the original three fasts, which are a lighter form of fasts. There's the second set of three, which already are more severe, taniyot, tzibur. And then there's the seventh set of fasts, which are the last grouping of fast days, which are the most severe of the fast days. You have a total of 13, 3, 3, and 7. So what Rav Ashi suggests is that the only time that the menikot and ubarot fast is in that middle set of three. And that is because the original three, we've only just begun the process of fasting. It's not so drastic, it's not so severe, the gzeira yet, because if it rains after those fasts, it's okay. Once we've already passed those three fast days, we're already into a serious situation, and therefore the minikot and ubarot fast. Now, that would be true of the subsequent or the latter seven fasts as well. The only reason we don't ask them to fast then is because it would be too much. We understand that seven fast days is excessive for them. And therefore, we only require them to fast in the set of three that are severe, not the latter seven. So now, if you go back and read all the braytot, you would read them like this. The first brayta reads, Uberot minikot mitanot berishonot. Rishonot here mean relative rishonot. Relative to the last or the latter fasts, rishonot means the middle three fasts. So those rishonot, they fast. Ve'en mitanot b'achronot means in the latter seven fasts, they do not fast. The next brayta, which is Tani Idach, mitanot b'achronot, that is relative to the first three. The middle three are achronot, and therefore they fast on those three. Ve'en amitanot b'rishonot means the first three fast days they do not fast on. V'tan yidach, and the last brayta which says ein mitanot lo b'rishonot v'lo b'achronot means literally the first set of three and the last set of seven. There they do not fast at all, but they do fast in the middle three fasts. So that's how Rav Ashi resolves or reconciles between these three braytot. The conclusion is that the minikot and uberot fast on the middle three fast days. They do not fast in the first three because we're not in such a severe state yet. And they do not fast in the latter seven because it's just too much or too excessive for them to fast for those 7 days. Now, the Gemara continues the quote from the Mishnah, which is Ma elu yiterot al rishonot, elu matri'in v'noalim et achanuyot. That these are similar to the earlier fasts, but they have this additional aspect to them, which is in these fast days, matriin, whatever that means, we're going to explain in the Gemara in a second what that means, v'noalim et achanuyot, and they close down the stores. V'mai matriin, what does matriin mean? Rav Yehuda Omer b'shofarot, use a shofar, and matriin comes from the word trua, which means to call out, to scream out, the trua, and therefore matriin here means using a shofar to generate the sound of the trua. V'rav Yehuda b'rei de Rav Shmor b'shilat, mishmei de Rav Amar, be'anenu. That the matriin here means to call out like a tse'aka, that they call to Hashem, and that is in the form of anenu. Now both Rashi and Tosafot explain over here the anenu that we're speaking about is not the anenu that we add in tefillah, because that's added in the tefillah belachash. That's said in the private Shemoneh Esrei. It's also said by the Shatz, but it's said in the private Shemoneh Esrei. The anenu that we're referring to over here is the anenu at the tail end of Slichot, where we say all of those anenus, which we say avinu, boreinu, Goleinu, we use the Aleph Bet, and each time we surround it with Anenu Avinu Anenu, Anenu Boreinu Anenu, Anenu Goleinu Anenu. So that's the Anenu we're referring to, is that tefillah where we're beseeching Hashem to respond to our tefillot, to accept our tshuva. So either the matriin is the shofarot, and the reason you would blow the shofar is because it would be machnia libam, that the kol ha-shofar causes people to be fearful and to realize that they've sinned, and therefore they're going to respond to that sin by blowing the shofar and arousing themselves to do tshuva, similar to the way that we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Or it refers to aneinu, which is the slichot, where we're beseeching Hashem. It's the tefillot, the additional tefillot and slichot that we say on the fast day. That is what the matri'in is. So there's a machloket amuraim as to what the meaning of the word matri'in means in this context. Kasal kadatko. Our original assumption is, manda mar be'aneinu, lo amar b'shofarot. Manda amar b'shofarot, lo amar be'aneinu. That their opinions are mutually exclusive, and that either you think it's the shofar, or you think it's aneinu, exclusively. You don't think that it's both. It's either or. V'hatanyo. And we have a problem now. Ein pochatim misheva taniyot al tzibor. You don't have less than 7 taniyot of the tzibor. These are the latter 7. Shebehem yudchet hatraot, in which are included in them 18 blows. V'siman ledavar yiricho. And the sign for this, or the way to remember it, is yiricho. V'yiricho shofarot havo. And therefore, we know from Yiricho that when they surrounded Yiricho, when Yoshua and Am Yisrael go to battle against Yiricho, for the first 6 days, they go around once each day and blow the shofar. And on the 7th day, they go around 7 times and blow the shofar 7 times, and then the walls of Yiricho collapse. So, just like it was a shofar by Yiricho, so too, over here, we're talking about a shofar. V'tiyufta l'man damar b'aneinu. It's clearly a problem for the position that says that hatra here is aneinu, because here we're clearly saying in the braita that the shofar is blown. And if you're saying their opinions are mutually exclusive, then the one who says aneinu says no shofar. But here the braita clearly says there is a shofar on the fast day. Ella, b'shofarot, dukule alma, lo plige, dikari le hatra. Everybody agrees that subsumed under the term hatra is a reference to shofarot. Kiplige be'aneinu. They argue here about aneinu. Mar savar karle hatra. One opinion believes that hatra also includes the term aneinu under it. Mar savar lo karila hatra. The other one says no, that hatra refers exclusively to the shofar and not to aneinu. So the manda mar be'aneinu koshekein b'shofarot. So according to the one who says that hatra means aneinu, then of course not only does it mean aneinu, but it includes the shofarot as well. But according to the one who says that it references to shofarot, that's exclusively shofarot and not to aneinu. Now, the way that Rashi explains this latter half is, Elo b'shofarot u'kuli alma, d'ha matrin d'ktani hocha b'matnitin d'avinen b'taniyot b'shofarot. Everybody agrees that with regard to the hatra of our Mishnah here in the taniyot, it's definitely referring to the shofar. Ki pligi b'aneinu, Rashi says, is ki pligi b'matrin. That when we say hatra'a by other difficulties that befall the tzibur, what is the definition of hatra'a in that case? So you could have read the Gemara, and that's the way that I did, as simply referring to our case over here. By the case of taniyot, is it hatra'a mean exclusively shofarot? Or does hatra'a here mean both shofarot and aneinu? But the way Rashi says it is that everybody agrees over here by the taniyot we're referring to a shofar. By the other difficulties that befall the tzibur, there's a machloket as to the meaning of hatra there. Does hatra mean aneinu? Or does hatra mean shofarot? So Rashi reads it as referring to two separate instances. Gemara says, v'hatanyo, don't we have a braita of sharko minei puraniyot amig ragashot? Any other difficulties that befall the tzibur, kigon. Examples of them are chichuch. Chichuch means some sort of itching ailment. Chagav, locust. Zvuv, flies. Vitzirah, hornets, wasps, vitushim, gnats, vishiluach nechashim v'akravim, and snakes, attacks of snakes and scorpions. Lo hayu matriin el tzoakim. They are not matri in those cases, but rather they are tzoak, they call out, they scream out. And now the Gemara makes a deal from this. Midetzaka bepeh, since it's clear here that the tzaka that we're referring to over here, it means calling out with your voice, hatra b'shofarot. It's clearer than the definition of hatra is shofarot, and that means that the meaning of the word hatra is shofar and not aneinu. Tzeaka is used when we're talking about tefillah or calling out. Hatra is used when you use an instrument like a shofar. Gemara says tanaehi. It's actually a machloket tanaim. The Tanya, we have a braita. Al elu matriin b'shabbat. On these cases or in these instances, we are matriya on Shabbat. Al ir shikifua gais, a city that is besieged by troops, o nahar, or is under the threat of being flooded. Velasfina muturefet bayam, a vessel, a boat that is foundering in the sea. Rabbi Yossi Omer, le'ezra aval lo le'tzaka. That's only true in terms of getting help, but not for tefillah. Pemai, what type of calling out are we talking about here? Ilam b'shofarot, if we're not about shofarot here, shofarot b'shabbat mishari. Since when can you blow a shofar on Shabbat? Allah be'aneinu. Must be that we're talking about aneinu here. V'kariyla hatra'a. And the Tanakhama calls that al elu matriin b'shabbat. We are allowed to be matri on Shabbat with these instances, and that's talking about aneinu. Now Rashi brings two possibilities as to what the opinion of Rabbi Yossi here is in this case. What does it mean? V'lo litzahaka. So the first opinion, or the first way Rashi reads it is le'ezra. You can call out for help. V'lo litzahaka means not for tefillah. We are not so certain that our tefillot will be answered. Therefore, we don't grant you permission to, quote-unquote, violate the Shabbat or the spirit of Shabbat and to daven b'tzaka on Shabbat, which is against the spirit of Shabbat, because we're not so certain that it's going to be helpful in the end anyway. So we're not going to allow you to do it because we don't think there'll be so much benefit. So therefore, tzaka, we don't allow tefillah. What we do allow you to do is to call to other people to enlist their help. That's what he says, mi pi mori. Then he says, lishna achrina is le'ezra. The kamar tanakama, the help that the tanakama is speaking about is matrim. Te mashmak bekoram, that you call out. But Rabbi Yossi says, no, you can do it le'ezra, that you're allowed to be mitpalel, each individually in their house, but lo le'tzaka, you can't call out in the public sense. So the Tanakhama is saying that you can do it publicly, whereas Rabbi Yossi is saying you can only do it privately. You can daven by yourself. Not that you can't daven, just can't daven or scream out publicly. You can only daven by yourselves or individually. So those are two ways to read Rabbi Yossi. Now, back in this Gemara, just want to review two issues, things that are very difficult. The one issue is with regards to the shofar. Why are we blowing the shofar? And that question is twofold. By Yericho, what is the proof from the fact that Yericho is used as the siman for the fact that you blow the shofar? So Rashi brings two answers to that. One is Yericho k'diktiv b'shofarot, that Yericho here is simply used to prove that you use shofarot. And then Rashi brings a second lashon, which is k'dei she'anu, k'derech she'anu b'Yericho yedei shofarot, so that it's giving you a sign that we should be answered by the shofar just like they were answered by the shofar in Yericho. It's a siman, it's a sign that we will be answered, that we will be answered like we were answered in Yericho. Tosafot actually brings a third possibility, which is, just like in Yericho, every time they go around, they blow the shofar, so too, on a fast day, we blow the shofar for each additional bracha that is added into the Shmoneh Esrei. And that's what the Gemara was suggesting before. That leads into our second point, which is, how many blasts do they blow? So here, the Braita says 18. We'll come back and discuss this. The number is very controversial. But Rashi says that it's because we add in 6 additional brachot in a Tanit Tzibur. We have 24 brachot in a Tanit Tzibur. These versus the 18 in a normal Shmoneh Esrei. So that's a 6 additional brachot. And each additional brachot gets a tekiah, trua, tekiah. And therefore, you get 6 times 3 is 18. So that's what it means, that just like in Yericho, every time they went around, they blew a blast and concluded that section. So too, by the brachot that are added for the fast day, we make a blast, which is a tekiah, trua, tekiah, after the completion of each one of them. And that's how we get to the 18. All right, that's just for the basics of the Gemara. Here are the problems. The first problem is, since when do we blow a shofar on a tanit? We've seen both in the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah with regards to the Mishnah, the tool, the instrument of the tanit is Chatzotzrot. You don't blow a shofar on a tanit, but rather you blow the chatzotzrot. And in the Mikdash, it says that they blew both the chatzotzrot and the shofar, but the chatzotzrot continued because the chatzotzrot are the trumpets of the day. And that's what the Torah says as well. The Torah says whenever there's a tzar, anything that goes wrong, then you blow the chatzotzrot and not the shofar. So the shofar and the chatzotzrot are distinct. Yet our Gemara over here just talks about shofar without any mention of chatzotzrot. And to reinforce the point, it brings a proof from Yericho that shofar is the instrument of the day. So why are we talking about a shofar and not chatzotzrot? So there are many Rishonim who believe that the Gemara really means chatzotzrot over here. It does not mean shofar. It just uses the term shofar generically. And that we see in the Gemara and Shabbat as well, where the Gemara and Shabbat says that post-Chorban, there are certain words whose meaning got changed. One of those words that the Gemara talks about is a shofar in chatzutzrot. Prior to the Churban, a shofar meant a shofar, and chatzutzrot meant trumpet. And then after the Churban Abayit, it actually switched around. So then the word shofar here could mean chatzutzrot. I don't think that's what the Gemara is saying, but just the mere fact that they are interchangeable in a sense makes it that when the Gemara says shofar, you don't have to take it literally. It just means that chatzutzrot, you have to blow the instrument of the day. And same thing with regards to the proof from Yericho. Proof of Yericho is not what you blow, because there you blew a shofar as distinct from the chatzotzrot that you blow, but rather it's just telling you that you need to use an instrument. What's the proper instrument of the day? That is the chatzotzrot. So that is the approach of many of the Rishonim as to what this Gemara means. It really means chatzotzrot and does not mean the shofar. On the other hand, there are others like the Ramban who believes that there are actually three different types of problems that can arise. There's the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, which is the shofar. There's a mitzvah of the Torah in Bahalotcha, which is when you have a tzar and a tzara that comes upon you. In those instances, you blow the chatzotzrot. There's also an in-between situation, which is these fast days. In these fast days, the Ramban claims that in the Mikdash, they used to blow the chatzotzrot. The purpose of the chatzotzrot was knufaya, was to bring people together, is to gather the people together. That was only relevant when we were in the Mikdash. Post the Churban or post the Mikdash, then there is no reason to blow the Chatzotzrot, because Knufaya was a reference or a necessity when we were talking about the Mikdash, gathering the people together. People are dispersed and they're in different cities, then the Chatzotzrot are no longer a relevant tool of the Ta'anit. And there, where the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that they only blow the Chatzotzrot together with the Shofarot in the Mikdash, but outside of the Mikdash, you only blow the Chatzotzrot. That is on any day, not fast days, but that's on the other difficulties that befall Chal Yisrael. You blow Chatzotzrot. Therefore, the Ramban says here, when it's talking about shofar, it's talking about post-Churban, outside the Mikdash, you blow a shofar on a Ta'anit. That's the way the Ramban learns. The Raivud has an interesting description over here, which will also impact the next section or the next question that we have here, which is the Raivud says that there are two sets of blowings that took place on a Ta'anit. There were the blowings that took place in the Shmoneh Esrei, which were the six additional brachot that they blow inside of the Shmoneh Esrei, as well as the fact that there's another set of tekiot that are blown post the Shmoneh Esrei. Post the Shmoneh Esrei, where you would also say slichot and you would say aneinu. In that instance also, there was a shofar, an accompaniment of an instrument afterwards. And he divides between the two of them. He says that when it comes to the chatzotzrot are blown during the Shmoneh Esrei, in the six plechot of the Shmoneh Esrei, whereas the shofarot were blown after the Shmoneh Esrei. So our Gemara over here, which talks about the shofarot, is talking about post-Shmoneh Esrei, and that's where the argument is. Post-Shmoneh Esrei, do you blow the shofar, or do you say anenu? And then the Gemara's conclusion is that, according to one day, you only blow the shofar, and one day you say anenu and blow the shofar. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that talks about chatzotzrot, that's talking about during Shmoneh Esrei. Those are the chatzotzrot that are blown during the Shmoneh Esrei. So that's how the Raivid reconciles over here. But it's an important distinction. We discussed this back in Rosh Hashanah, the difference between shofar and chatzotzrot. Many, again, of the Rishonim meld them together, blend them together as if there's no difference. But it seems from both the Gemara and the Torah that there is a difference. And that has to be reconciled with our Gemara over here, which talks about shofar in regards to a fast day. That's the first question. The second issue is this number 18, that we blow 18 blows. Rashi over here claims that we blow 18 blows because of the six additional brachot times the three blowings, which are tkiah, tshuah, tkiah. The Gemara is very difficult because we're going to have a Mishnah upcoming in the next two daf, Mishnayot, that described that there were actually six brachot added, but when they blew the shofar, they blew it with the seven brachot, the six brachot that were added, plus Goel Yisrael, which was the lead-in brachot for those six additional brachot, which means there were seven brachot, and we blew seven times. So if you actually look by the number 18 over here, when it says, Taniyot, Alitzibosh, Ven, Yud, Chet, Hatraot, there's a little aleph. The little aleph sends you over to the Gra, and the Gra's girsa is Kaf Aleph Tkiot, or Kaf Aleph Hatraot. He says 21 blasts, because they're really seven brachot times three, which is 21. It's the six additional, plus Goel Yisrael. Those seven brachot times three give you the 21 blasts that are blown on a fast day. If you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel over here, he actually has a different girsa, a third girsa. His girsa is, Ein pochadim mizayin taniyot ala tzibor behen zayin hatraot, that you have seven fast days in which there are seven blasts. So he doesn't have a number 18, he doesn't have a number 21, but rather he has a number 7. And those seven blasts are the 7 extra brachot that we blow on the taniyot, because each one of them comes or is associated with a blast. Now, whether that means that there's only a single blast for each one of them, or whether that means that a hatra'ah is the truah, and the truah comes with the kiyah before and the kiyah afterwards, that's unclear. And that might also be subject to the machloket of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in Rosh Hashanah. If you remember, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in Rosh Hashanah, when they were counting the number of blasts, the question was, do you count kiyah, truah, tekiyah as a single blast? Or do you count kiyah, truah, tekiyah as 3 blasts? And that might be the difference of opinion over here. The 7 that are mentioned over here reference that opinion that says that a tekiyah, truah, tekiyah are considered to be 1 blast, and therefore there's only 7 additional blasts for the 7 brachot. According to the opinion that says that a tekiyah, truah, tekiyah, the Rabbanon who say that's 3 different blasts, then that's 3 times 7, and that gives you the 21 blasts. Again, according to Rashi, it's the 6 additional brachot times 3 is 18, but that's problematic with the Mishnah coming up. So this number 18 is also somewhat suspect. We have, first of all, different girsaot. You have the Gra saying that the girsa is 21. You have the Rabbeinu Chananel saying the girsa is 7. And I think there was another girsa with 13 in it as well, which is also another complexity, how they get to the 13, which is based on a different way of setting up the blowings for the 7 additional brachot. But that's part of this issue, is exactly how or when did they blow the shofar during the fast days. And this goes back to the Raivud that we said before. The Raivud, if you remember before, says that there are tkiyot during Shmoneh Esrei, and there are also tkiyot that are after the Shmoneh Esrei. And that when we talk about the seven blasts, according to the Raivud, are the ones after Shmoneh Esrei. Whereas the other blasts, whether it's 18 or 21, are the ones during Shmoneh Esrei. So that way the Raivud reconciles between the two different numbers, saying that there are 2 different sets of tkiyot that are blown. One by Chatzotzrot, one by Shofarot, one during Shmoneh Esrei, one after Shmoneh Esrei, one that is 7, and one that is 21 blasts. Okay, those are just the 2 little issues that came up in our Gemara over here. Now, back at the end of the Amud here, by the 2 dots, Bishnei de Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah. In the time period of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah is a grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. He is an Amora. Havatzaro. There were some difficulties. Ve'gazar tlatis reitaniyot, and he imposed 13 fast days on the tzibor, ve'lo yaneh, and they were not responded to, they were not answered favorably by Hashem. Sava the migzar tfei, he wanted to add on additional fast days. Amar le Rabbi Ami, hari amru. We say in our Mishnayot here, with regards to the fast days for rain, that ein machuchim et tzibor yoter midai. We don't put too much pressure on the tzibor. We're limited to asking them to fast 13 times. The Yechidim, we saw fast beforehand and fast afterwards, but the demand on the Tzibur is only for 13 fast days. So Amar Rabbi Ava, Breda Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Rabbi Ami, the Ovid, the Garmei, Hu the Avad, that he did it for his own personal benefit. Rabbi Ami's statement is not true, but rather, the limitation of 13 only references to problems that are associated with rain, not with other Puraniyot. And the reason he didn't want him to add on more fast days was because Rabbi Ami didn't want to fast anymore. And that's why he said, no more fasts. That limit of 13 is only a reference to rain. That with other difficulties that befall Klal Yisrael, calamities that befall Klal Yisrael, we continue to fast and we continue to beseech Hashem until we're answered. So, Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a braita that supports that understanding. Shamru shalosh ubshamru sheva lo amru al gshamim. We say there are 3 fast days and 7 fast days, meaning 3, 3, and then 7. That's only true by gshamim. Aval shar minei puranut or puraniyot, any other calamities or difficulties that befall b'nei Yisrael mitanim v'ochim ad she'anu, until they are answered. So leimetav yitiyufta de Rabbi Ami. This brayta seems to clearly contradict the position of Rabbi Ami. Amalecha Rabbi Ami. Tanayehi, this actually is a machloket tanaim. Titania, ein gozrim yoter mishlosh esrei taniyot al tzibor, lefi shein matrichim et tzibor yoter midai. Divrei Rabbi. Rabbi says that there is a limit of 13 fasts. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer lo min hashem huzeh, elim yipnei sheyatza zmana shel reviyah. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you're mixing and matching apples and oranges. The reason for the limitation on the 13 fasts is in regard to rain, because rain is a timely issue. Rain is only relevant when the time for rain is there. If it doesn't rain in the time period you need rain, it's actually going to be to the detriment when it rains at a later period of time, because then it's actually raining at a time that it's destructive rather than beneficial. So when it comes to rain has a limitation of 13 fasts because it's, in a sense, time-bound. And that's why we limit it to the 13 fasts. On the other hand, when it comes to other puraniyot that are not bound by time, there we're going to fast as many times as you need. So here you see a machloket tanaim between Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi as to whether the fast days are limited to 13 even outside of rain, or only by rain do we limit it to 13 times or days, whereas the other puraniyot, we allow you to fast as many times as necessary. That's the way that Rabbi Ami will explain this issue or this difficulty. There are a number of takeaways from this. One of the most important takeaways from this is that the Gemara acknowledges the idea here that we continue to, I would say in a quote-unquote, pester Hashem until He responds to us. That we are allowed to continue to beseech Hashem over and over and over again until He answers us, and that we don't give up. That the idea of praying to Hashem and asking from Hashem, it's not simply we ask once and that's it, not twice, but we continuously ask until Hashem responds. And the idea of tefillah is not that simply we daven, but tefillah means that we beg Hashem and that we're allowed to do this over and over again. Of course, in the current events and the issues going on to Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael today, that is what the Gemara clearly says, that we continue to ask and beseech Hashem over and over again. And we do not give up. We don't give up hope. And we don't give up until Hashem responds to us. Hashem wants our tefillot. Hashem wants to hear from us. And we have to daven over and over and over again. Fortunately, sometimes the answer isn't the answer that we want. But Bezrat Hashem, it will be. And that is also learned out from the term Ve'et Chanan by Moshe Rabbeinu. The idea of davening is Et Chanan. It's an idea of repetitive beseeching of Hashem, not giving up hope, and not giving up the attempts to arouse Hashem's rachamim upon us that we should get a positive answer to difficult situations. The other thing is that there is a difference between rain and other puraniyot, which is also important. That rain, because of its time nature, has a limitation. Whereas other puraniyot, which there is no such time limit to them, then the ability to keep on davening and beseeching Hashem is not limited by the 13 fasts that we discuss here with regards to the rain. Okay, now, the Gemara here raises an issue. It's a very important issue. It was an issue that we discussed with regards to the Shabbat daf, the daf and Shabbat. Over there, we quoted the Shut HaRosh. The Shut HaRosh over there, who said, well, I don't understand our practice today, which is, why is it that today we stop saying, Tein Talu Motor Livracha and Mashiach Ruach Moed HaGoshem at Pesach time? And why don't we start earlier than 60 days after the Tkufa? Why are we bound by Bavel? Bavel is a certain climate, it's a certain situation. Why is all of the Gola affected by Bavel? Rashi says over there, well, Bavel is the paradigm for Chutz Laaretz, so whatever happens in Bavel happens everywhere else. But the Rosh says that it makes no sense. How could it be that in Spain and in Germany, where we need rain during the period of time, especially between Pesach and Shavuot, we're not going to ask for rain? And today, in the modern era, where we have places like Australia, where the rainy season is completely different than Bavel, why are we following Bavel in terms of our davening? That was the claim of the Rosh over there. We discussed that he was unsuccessful in his attempts to change the minag, although he did have a residual impact on the halacha, which is that if a person says, Tein Talu Motu Livracha on their private Shemone Esrei in a place that needs rain during that time, they may not need to repeat the Shemone Esrei, and if they do repeat it, they have to do it as a Tefillat Nidavah, because it's not clear they have to go back based on the Shut HaRosh. This is a question that's being raised here in the next part of the Gemara, is along those lines of the Rosh, which is, Shalchulei Bnei Ninvei L'Rabi, Kegon Anan, Da'afilu B'Tekufat Tammuz B'inan Mitra. For us, that even in the summertime, during Tammuz, we need rain. Heichi Na'avit, what should we do? Ki Yechidim Daminan, are we like individuals? O Kirabim Daminan, or we are like a general populace? Ki Yechidim Daminan, if we're only considered to be individuals, then bishomea tefillah. Then you can only add in shomea tefillah. Okay, rabim daminan. Are we considered to be a group of individuals, a public in general? And therefore, the addition would be in birkat hashanim. And he would add it in barach aleinu. Shalach lehu, his answer to them was, ki yechidim demitu, you are like individuals, ubishomea tefillah. Say it in shomea tefillah. And this has impact in many different halachot. One of the halachot is, if you're in a position where you need rain, despite the fact that it's not the rainy season, and you need to ask for rain, you ask for it in Shomea Tefillah, and not in Baruch Aleinu. The only time you can invoke Baruch Aleinu is when it's a Tzorech Rabim. As Rashi and Tosafot point out over here, even a Yachid who daven Shemone Esrei during the rainy season says, Tein Talu Motu Livracha in Baruch Aleinu, because the Rabbim during that period of time need rain. So he is a part of the Rabbim, and therefore we can add it in Baruch Aleinu. But when he's not part of the Rabbim, then the Yachid adds it in Shomea Tefillah. It also has impact with regards to people who travel between Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael, between Zayin Merch Cheshvan, where in Eretz Yisrael they're already starting to ask for rain, and in Chutz La'aretz they have yet to ask for rain. In those instances where a person travels back and forth, and they're caught up in a situation where, for instance, if a Ben Eretz Yisrael goes out to Chutz La'aretz, he's already saying, Tein Talumato Livracha, when he gets to Chutz La'aretz, they're not saying it out there. So he can't say it because the Rabbim isn't saying it out there. But on the other hand, where he's from, they already began to say it. So what does he do? So the solution is that he does not say it in Baruch Aleinu, but he rather adds it in Shomea Tefillah. So he says in Baruch Aleinu, he says Tein Bracha, like the populace, like the Rabbim in Chutz La'aretz where he is. But because of his necessity back home where he does need rain, in Shomea Tefillah, he adds in Tein Talu Motar Livracha. And the same would be true in the reverse, meaning that when a Ben Chutz La'aretz comes to Eretz Yisrael, he won't say it in Baruch Aleinu, but he will add it in Shomea Tefillah. Obviously, if you daven for the Tzibur or the Shliach Tzibur, you have to follow whatever the practice of the area is. But in your private Shmoneh Esrei, the way to circumvent this problem is to make the request in Shomea Tefillah and not in Baruch Aleinu. So that has impact over here. The other thing that has an impact around is what is considered to be a Rabbim. Over here, the answer that the Bnei Ninveh receive is that you are not considered to be a Rabbim. Now that might be because Ninveh is just a city, or even if it's a city-state, it's not a large enough area. The Rosh argues in that same tshuva about what is classified as a Rabbim, and over there he says that if a whole country or a whole region needs rain during that period of time, they are considered to be a Rabbim. He says like Spain, Ashkenaz, and Tsarfat, that whole area that needs rain during the period of time, they should be already considered a Rabbim and not Yechidim anymore. And obviously in North America the same would be true, that in North America, if people needed rain in certain periods of time, they should be classified as a Rabbim. That's a large enough tract of land, a large enough region, where they can be considered a Rabbim by themselves. So that also the Rosh deals with in that Shuvah, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch Halacha, about what's the definition of a Yachid versus the Rabbim. Obviously, Ninveh doesn't qualify, but what does qualify, and that is discussed by that Shuta Rosh, about what does qualify to be a Rabbim. Now the Gemara says, Meitevei, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai, when is this true? Bizman shashanim ketikanan v'Yisrael shruim al admatan. When the years work like normal, which means that it rains in Cheshvan and the rain ends by the time Nisan rolls around, and Bnei Yisrael are on their land, aval bizman hazeh, today, hakol lifi hashanim, every year is different. I mean, the seasons and the rainy season changes every year. Hakol lifi hamikamot, and depending where you are makes a difference. But hakol lifi hazman is some question of whether that has to be here or not, whether the season or not, whether that's part of the girsa. So therefore, it sounds like over here that we're not governed by a fixed rule, and it really has to do with the location that you're in. So the Gemara says, Amarle matnita ramitale de Rabbi. You're bringing a braita as a question on Rabbi. Rabbi Tano hu polit. What's the big deal? Rabbi is a Tano, and you just brought another Tano. So now we have a machloket Tanaim. Just because a braita says something else is not a question on Rabbi. When you're talking about an Amora, a braita is a problem. When you're talking about another Tano, a braita is not a problem. You can argue on it. So my havi Allah, what's the din? From Nachman Amar b'Birkat Hashanim, that you added in Birkat Hashanim, Rashesh Amar b'Shomei Tefillah, v'Hilchot Halacha is b'Shomei Tefillah. As long as you're considered to be a Yachid, you add it in Shomei Tefillah. And again, that's like a safety. If you add it in Shomei Tefillah, you don't lose, because you're allowed to add it in Shomei Tefillah. And even if you forgot to say Tein Talumotar Livracha in Baruch Aleinu, the makeup you can do is in Shomei Tefillah. So even if you're supposed to say it in Birkat Hashanim, and you say it in Shomei Tefillah, you're still Yotze. So saying it in Shomei Tefillah, in a sense, is a backup because it covers both situations. It covers the situation if you're a Yachid, and also covers the situation as a backup if you are Rabbim. So if you say it in Shomei Tefillah, you're for sure safe. And that is a safe way to get out of the problem if you want to ask for rain in places where you don't think it should be bound by the rules of Bavel, meaning that from 60 days after Tzkufah until Pesach time. And now the Gemara goes back to our Mishnah and says, B'sheni matim im heshecha, chamishi galayom ibnei kvar shabbat. In those latter fast days, then the stores only open up a little bit close to dark on Mondays, and on Thursdays they are open because of Kvod HaShabbat. Now the Gemara says, explain to me what it's meant in the Mishnah. Hivalu, hey chik tani, what is meant in the Mishnah? Bebet matim im hashecha, On Mondays, they open up close to dark. They open up a little bit. But on Thursdays, they're open all day because of Kavod Shabbat. But when they open up, they're still matin. So the matin is the governing rule here, is that they only open up a little bit. They open their doorway slightly ajar. But on Mondays, they only do it near dark. Whereas on Thursdays, they do it all day. Odelma b'sheni matin. Maybe the word matin is only defining Mondays. Then on Mondays, they open the doors slightly, or the shutters, they open a little bit towards dark. U'mechamishi potchim kol yom kulo. On Thursdays, you open up like regular, as if there's nothing going on because of Kavod HaShabbat. So which one is it? Is the Thursday governed by the word matin, or is it not governed by the word matin? Is the matin only defining what happens on Mondays? Is also defining what happens on Thursdays? So the Gemara says, Tashma. Tanya, b'sheni matin ad erev. B'sheni, on Mondays, they open up slightly and by nightfall. U'b'chamishi potchim kolom kolo mipnei kavod HaShabbat. And on Thursdays, they open up all day because of kavod HaShabbat. So now, hayulo shnei pitachim. If he has two doorways, poteach achad v'noel achad. He opens one of the doorways and keeps the other one shut. Hayulo itztaba kineged pitcho. If he has a, Rashi calls an itztaba, a seat. Or is it a stand? We saw this in the Gemara in Shabbat and in Eruvin. With regards to stores that are adjacent to the Reshut HaRabim, but have these itztabot between them and the Reshut HaRabim. So those itztabot make it difficult for people to traverse, and therefore they're not considered to be Reshut HaRabim outside the stores. So if there's an itztabot in front of his store, you can open like normal and not worry about it because your door is not clearly visible from the Reshut HaRabim. The itztabot stands between you and your doorway. But here you clearly say that when we're talking about Thursdays, we're talking about putchin, that they open it up completely, and that by sheni, it's matin, and by Thursdays, it is opening it up completely. You open up like regular when you open up the doorways. Right now, the Gemara says, in the last stage, where we've already finished the seven fast days and we've not been answered, avru elu v'nanu, mima'atim b'masa matan, we diminish the amount of transactional commerce that we do, u'bibinyanu minitiya, with building and planting, tana. What is the building that is restricted over here? Bibinyan, binyan shel simcha. We're talking about buildings that generate simcha. Nitiya, nitiya shel simcha. These are the same halachot that are said with regards to the 9 days by Tisha B'Av, that mishenichnas av ma'atim b'simcha. So ma'atim b'simcha is also here with binyan shel simcha, nitiya shel simcha. The Gemara wants to know, ezehu binyan shel simcha? What's considered to be a building that is simcha? Ze abone beit chatanut livno. This is someone who makes an addition to the house for his son. In their day, when they got married, they used to put on an extra room to the house. And that room was basically the chuppah for the newlyweds. And that's where they lived for their first year, and maybe longer, together with the family. But they added on a new section to the house. That is a binyan of simcha. Ezu nitiya shel simcha. What is a planting of simcha? Ze noteya abvarnaki shel melachim. Abvarnaki shel melachim we saw in the Gemara in Eruvin, which is a tree of the kings. Now, there are two explanations. Rashi here brings them. One explanation is that it's a tree that casts a lot of shade, and the kings used to plant them in their backyards to stroll under those trees. Or the other possibility was a practice that when the new prince was born to the king, they used to plant a tree. And when he came of age to become the king, they used to cut that tree down and use the wood from that tree to build him a throne. So one of those two types are being described here, but these are binyan shel simcha, nitiya shel simcha, and that's exactly what's restricted during the 9 days of Ma'atim b'simcha, are only binyan shel simcha, nitiya shel simcha. If, for whatever reason, the house, or something happens in the house that needs immediate fixing, that's not going to binyan that you use restricted. That's not a binyan shel simcha. That's preventing further damage. That's preventing danger. Those things you're allowed to take care of. Things you can't do are build anew, or fix things in a way that bring simcha to the individual. Right now, the next thing is, u'b'shelat shalom, similar to Tisha B'Av, we do not then greet each other. There's no more shelat shalom. Tanabanan, chaverim, those who are aware of the halacha, ain shelat shalom b'neim, they do not greet each other. The same halacha as Tisha B'Av, where we're avilim, and you're not allowed to greet each other. Ameya aretz hasholim, but you have people who don't know the halacha, and they say hello. Machzirin lehem b'safa rafa. We answer them back in a light voice, u'b'kovid rosh, and with a heavy head. Meaning that we do not ignore them, mipnei va. They're asking and they're greeting. So we do not ignore their overtures, but we respond in a way that is not a positive and overwhelming greeting. We give them a light greeting, just a response, so they don't get angry, but they also might understand that there's something different than normal. And that's the same halacha with regards to Tisha B'Av. that one is not allowed to greet, but if one is greeted, then they can respond in a low tone to that individual or acknowledge that individual, so there's no eva, but they cannot conduct themselves like normal. V'hein mit atfin v'yoshvim ka'avilim u'keminunadim k'vnei adam n'yusufim l'makom achirachmu aleihem min ha'shamayim. And then they sit wrapped up, sitting like avilim. That's what we know, that an avel is utaf, he wraps his head up. U'menudim is people are excommunicated. V'nei adam n'yusufim, those people who have now aroused the displeasure of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, achirachmu aleihem min ha'shamayim, until they actually consent to remove the decree min ha-shamayim with regards to this. So they sit like avilim, they sit like minudim. Rashi over here says, like a mitzora. Quotes the pasuk from the mitzora of Asafam Yateh, which Rabbi Kiva Eger questions, why is that even the source here? Mitzora is not relevant over here. We actually learned out of Yechezkel that you have to wrap yourself when you're an avel. But the basic idea is that a person is an avel and a minudeh, and therefore they sit or they have the practices of an avel. And that's what we do on Tisha B'Av, and that's what they're doing in this instance as well. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Ein Adam Chashuv Rashai Lipol Al Panav, Elam Gein Ne'enek Yehoshua Ben Nun. A person who is Chashuv, and who the Tzibur looks to be answered by Hashem, cannot fall on his face, unless he's going to be answered like Yehoshua Ben Nun. Meaning that it's a bizui for him to fall on his face in front of the Tzibur. So that is only worthwhile if he's going to be answered by Hashem. But if he's not going to be answered by Hashem, then it's not worthwhile. Shenemar, Vayomer Hashem al Meshua kumlach. Get up. Why are you falling on your face? This is after defeat Ba'ai. So there, Yeshua falls on his face before Hashem, and Hashem says to him, get up. Why are you falling on your face? You got to act. You don't just fall on your face here. But Yeshua is clearly answered by Hashem when he falls on his face. So it's only appropriate for someone to do nefilat apayim, not like we do today, tachanun, but nefilat apayim literally, where one falls on their face in front of Hashem. That's only worthwhile if you think you're going to be answered by Hashem, or that nobody expects you to be answered by Hashem. So if nobody expects you answered by Hashem, then that's not a problem. But if the people are looking towards you and you're in a position of stature and power, then you only can fall down if you are assured of being answered like Yeshua ben Nun. And if you want to see a beautiful memra on the power of Nefilat Apayim, the power of Tachanun, it's kedai to look at the Rabbeinu Bechai on Parshat Korach, with regards to the Nefilat Apayim of Moshe and of Aaron, there where he discusses this issue of why is it so important and what is that power of Nefilat Apayim. A person who's of stature may not put on sackcloth unless he's going to be answered like Yoram ben Achav. Shenemar. Here they're bringing a story. This is a story from the Haftorah that we read for Parshat Mitzora, which is the Arba'ah Mitzorayim. It's talking about a severe famine that is happening because Aram has laid siege to the city of the king, the capital city of the king, and they are suffering greatly. And then it says there, Vahi kishma melech et divrei aisha. After the king heard the words of the woman. The words of the woman that he heard is that the woman says to the king, do something for us, you gotta help us out. And she tells him a story, which is that basically she came to agreement with her neighbor that today they would eat her son, and tomorrow they would eat her neighbor's son. So on the first day, they ate the first woman's son. On the second day, when it came to the other woman's son, she hid her son, and they weren't able to eat it. So she comes and tells this story to the king. The king is so distraught over this that if he cried big adav, he rents his garments, and he's walking along the wall, and the entire nation sees him, and he's covered in sackcloth. They see the king is so moved by how deep the famine is. And then Elisha comes into the picture later on and tells them basically that the famine is going to be over tomorrow. The prices the Navi describes over there have become exorbitant for any food. And he says tomorrow the prices are going to be so cheap that you're going to buy everything. And that's the story of the Arba Mitzorayim, where the Machane Aram runs away and leaves all their goods behind. And the people are freed from the famine. And the person who Elisha tells this to, the messenger of the king, who doesn't believe him, is trampled by the people because he tells him that you will see this, but you will not eat from it. And that is the story of the Arba Mitzorim. Just to note, in the Navi, the term Melech is used throughout that story, and it is ambiguous. It's not clear who the king is in that story. Now, it's obviously in the time of Elisha, and you can triangulate to limit, you know, which number of kings it is, but the Navi never tells us who the king is. The Gemara here makes an assumption that it's Yehoram ben Achav. But that's not stated in the Navi. The Gemara just makes it or states that as a given, even though it's not so clear from the Navi that it is Yehoram ben Achav. But over there, he put on sackcloth and he's responded to by Hashem, and then the next day they get plenty. I mean, the siege is broken on the next day. So only if you're going to be answered like that, Yehoram ben Achav, can you, a person of stature, put on sackcloth? So Rabbi Elazar has two statements there, which is that if you're going to do something that is, quote-unquote, beneath your dignity, you better be assured of an answer, otherwise it's not worthwhile to involve yourself in that practice. Now, the Gemara over here quotes something from the previous parshiot that we read in Shlach and Korach, which is, V'amar Rabbi Elazar, lo akol b'kriya, v'lo akol b'nifila. Not everybody's answered by rending their clothing, and not everybody's answered by falling on their face. Moshe Aaron ben Nifila, Moshe and Aaron, who were of a higher stature, all they had to do was fall on their face. So since they fall on their face, they were answered by Hashem. Yoshua Kalev, who are younger whippersnappers, they can't just fall down. They have to not only fall down, but they have to rent their garments in order to be answered by Hashem. Dichtiv, and he quotes a pasuk, Vayipol Moshe Aaron al pneihem, that Moshe and Aaron fall on their faces. And Yoshua v'kalev b'kriya, dichtiv, Yoshua b'nun v'kalev b'nifreya, karu b'gdehem. Now, the pasuk itself is not a proof to this, because nowhere there does it say that Moshe and Aaron or Kalev and Yoshua are answered. So, it's not talking necessarily about tefillah. This is talking about their response to the people crying about what the Meraglim say. When the people are crying about the fact that the Meraglim tell them that we're not going to be able to go in and we're not going to be able to beat these people, Moshe and Aaron fall on their faces, and Yoshua and Kalev rend their garments. So, in that instance, that's their response to what Bnei Israel are doing. It's not necessarily about tefillah, and as Rashi says over here, that it's a siman ba'alma. This is just an indication that Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces, Aaron and Kalev rent their garments, and Rabbi Elazar is concluding from this that their people are answered in different ways. People who are greater only have to fall down, and they're answered already. People who are of a lesser stature, they have to do more in order to be answered by Hashem. So Matkifla Rabbi Zera, Vitei Merushmo Bar Nachmani, Iavaktiv Yoshua Ked Amart. Your conclusion would be right if it just wrote Yoshua afterwards. Hashter Dichtiv V'Yoshua, it has a Vav Achibur Hava Ha'avid. Yoshua does both of them. So if you look back at the Pasuk, it says Vayipol Moshe Aaron al pneihem. Then it says V'Yoshua Binun V'Kalev V'Nifrah Karbi B'Gdehem. So V'Yoshua has a Vav Achibur that connects it to the first half of the Pasuk. And so what Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Rabbi Zera, is suggesting is that Yoshua didn't simply rent his garments, he fell on his face and rent his garments. So that he didn't just do one thing, he did both of these items. And that's a combination of what Moshe and Aaron do, as well as a combination of what Kalev ben Yefuneh does. And so, it's not necessarily a proof that some people fall, and some people rent their garments, because Yoshua also fell on his face, and was answered. Now, he did more than simply fall on his face, so it could be that it's still within the spirit of what is suggested here by Rabbi Elazar. Then, Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo akol b'kima, v'lo akol b'ishtachavaya. So now we have a whole balance of memorial to Rabbi Elazar. It's not necessarily connected to what's before, but thematically connected in the sense that Rabbi Elazar says not everybody is alike, which is that not everybody stands up to give honor, and not everybody bows down to give honor. Milachim bikima, the kings will stand up to give honor. Visarim, and the princes, or the ministers, veshtachavaya, they will bow down. Milachim bikima dichtiv, because it says, Komar Hashem goel Yisrael kidosho. This is what Hashem, the Redeemer of Klal Yisrael, the Holy One, says. Livzo nefesh, to those who are despised by man. Limita ev goy, the ones that the nations loathe. Le'eved moshlim, the ones that are servants to the rulers. Milachim yiru, the kings will see them. Vikamu, and now they'll have to stand up. So this pasuk is referring to the ge'uva latid lavo, when Bnei Yisrael are redeemed. And when they're redeemed, because they are the people of Hashem, then all those people that oppressed them and hated them before are now going to have to respond with respect to these individuals. So what is the respect they're going to grant? Milachim yiru vikamu. The kings will see them and stand up. That'll be the respect that the kings show. Visarim bishtachavaya. And the ministers of the princes will bow down. Dichtiv. The next line and the next words in the psukim are sarim bishtachavu. And the princes and the ministers will see it and bow down. So not everybody responds in the same manner. The kings will stand up to grant honor to Klal Yisrael, and the Sarim will bow down to grant honor to Klal Yisrael. So again, Matifla Rabbi Zeir Vitema Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, the same questioners again of Rabbi Elazar's opinion. Yavaktiv Visarim Yishtachavu Kidamart. If it said Visarim, then it would make sense what you're saying. Hashtu Yaktiv Sarim Vishtachavu, when it says the Sarim also bow down, Havaha Avud. It says you have to check where the Vav is. If what you were saying is true, the Vav should have been a Vav Achiluk, and it should say, Malachim Yiru V'kamu, the kings will see and stand up, Visarim Yishtachavu, and the princes will bow down, and the Vav would be a Vav Achiluk then. But the way that it's formulated in the pasuk is milachim yiru v'kamu, they will stand up. Sarim v'yishtachavu, the sarim will also bow down. And therefore, Rabbi Zera says, not only will they bow down, but they will also stand up. They'll do both manners of kavod towards Klal Yisrael, similar to his criticism about the statement with Yehoshua. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, af ani omer. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says, along these lines of Rabbi Lazar, I say like this, lo akol le'ora, v'lo akol le'simcha. Not everyone will be granted light, latid avo, and not everybody will be granted simcha, latid avo. Tzadikim le'ora, visharim le'simcha. Tzadikim will be granted the presence of Hashem to see the light of Hashem, whereas the yisharim, those that are straight, and as Rashi says, yisharim are a difim tzadikim. These are people who are even above the tzadikim, they will get the simcha. Dichtiv, because of the pasuk says, or zaru ala tzadik, light will be sown for the tzadik, ul yisharim simcha. And the Yisharim, how do we know they get Simcha? Diktiv, the latter half of the pasuk is, Uli Yishrelev Simcha. That those are of a straight heart will be granted Simcha. So again, not everybody gets the same response. Not everybody gets the same reward. Not everybody's answered in the same manner. Not everybody pays respects in the same way. I mean that there are different strokes for different folks. And that is borne out by all of these memrot over here. Tosfot over here asks, why doesn't Rabbi Zeira jump in here and say again, Or Zaru Al Tzadik? Ul the Yishrelev Simcha. The Vav Achibur again should say that the Yishrelev get both Simcha and they get Or Zeruah. So Tosafot discusses that, and one of the answers is that the Vav here is in a different location and the rewards are in a different location. The fact that Simcha is at the end separates it away from the Or. The Or and the Simcha are at either end of the Pasuk and the people are in between, and therefore the Vav doesn't act like a Vav Achibur over here, but rather as a Vav Achiluk. So he differentiates this from the previous cases that we saw before. And with that, we end the perek. Adron alach, mei matai. Okay, we'll stop over here.